Welcome to the Geek Generation, episode 12. I am joined once again, I think appropriately, for our episode 12 by Mike Wally Reinfleisch. How you doing, Mike?
Yo, Rob. What's up, man? How you doing?
There you go. Continuing the every four. The fans are actually clamoring for it.
Really?
Yeah, they don't like us breaking pattern, apparently.
Wow. Well, that's cool. I like that appreciation, but I feel like I'm betraying my own morals because I remember I forgot episode 12 last time because my math was way off, and I remember saying, don't put me on episode 12, and now here the frig I am on episode 12, so F you episode 12. No, but I'm happy to be here as always, and yeah, I think it's a cool little pattern that we do every four for you and I. So
seems we'll to be working out.
Yeah, we'll keep it going.
Sweet. All right. Well, in this episode coming up, we have the usual geek outs and freak outs. We're going to play some top three, go over listener emails, and of course the news block. And then for the third segment, I'm very excited to announce that we have our first interview, which I recorded earlier this week with Ned Vizzini, author of the book It's Kind of a Funny Story, which is hitting theaters as a movie on October 8th, starring Zach Galifianakis. So he was nice enough to sit down with me and chat about the book to movie process and all that stuff. So I can't wait for the fans to hear that.
That's awesome. I can't wait to hear that either. And that'll be a really cool third section of episode 12, which is about to be an epic episode because I'm actually awake and ready to go. Like, let's do this.
I love it. High energy all the time.
High energy, baby.
Well, then what are you geeking out over?
Yay!
Well, let's see. There's a few things I'm geeking out over. As we are recording this show now, I believe Iron Man 2 will have been out for a day.
You are correct.
So this is day 2, and I believe it was either episode 8 or 4 that I mentioned to you that I will be the guy on the second day getting Iron Man 2. So perhaps later this afternoon I might actually run out to my local Best Buy and buy two Blu-ray. Although the wife wants me to wait, and you know, because Christmas is a few months away, And I tend to do that as well. Like, a lot of cool stuff obviously comes out around Christmas, and I have no patience whatsoever, and I want to go out and buy what I want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, don't you hate when you ask someone for a certain DVD or Blu-ray or anything, video game, and they get you, like, the wrong kind?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that growing up as a kid? Like, you wanted, you know, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, and your parents got you, like, plain Street Fighter, or do you know what I'm trying to say? Like,
absolutely.
One of those little mix-ups, and you're like, no, Mom! So I don't want, like, if it's family or anything like that, just don't buy it for me. Just get me a gift card. So basically, Iron Man 2 on Blu-ray is really what I'm geeking out for. To a lesser extent, I'm geeking out over my two favorite Adult Swim shows finally coming back and finishing up the current seasons that they're on. The Venture Brothers is on season 4, and Death Clock, or aka Metalocalypse, is on season 3. And the only thing that ticked me off was they took about a year's hiatus.
Yeah, what's up with that? I've been dying to get more Venture.
Yeah, I own all seasons of Venture on DVD. Season 3 came out on Blu-ray, so I have that on Blu-ray. But, you know, they came out with, I want to say, maybe 6 episodes of season 4 last year. And the last episode was like November or December of 2009, and here it is almost October, you know, and it's, so it's very annoying, but at least it's back. I mean, hopefully there's something in the works that they're not saying. I mean, maybe they took that time to work on like a Venture Brothers movie script.
That would be sweet.
Who knows? Same thing. Well, actually, Metalocalypse, that's a little easier to explain because Brendan Small has been touring.
Oh, okay.
Pretty much, I think ever since season two, when Deathclaw really started to get popular as a fake band, then they started touring for real. So I think that's their excuse, is they just were touring and stuff. But I'm just really really psyched to have those both on TV again. And I think last but not least for my geek outs would be, well, let me ask you this, Rob.
Yeah.
You know who Danny McBride is?
The name strikes me. I think I can picture the curly hair.
Yes.
Yes.
Danny McBride is a guy. He's an actor who was in Pineapple Express. He was in the movie that kind of made him famous. It was called The Foot Fist Way.
Yes, yes.
And Will Ferrell kind of picked it up and took a look at it. And he's been in a ton of stuff. He had cameos in Observe and Report. And I can't remember everything he's been in, but he was in a show, or is in a show called Eastbound and Down.
I've heard of it.
And it's on HBO, and I subscribe to all that stuff. So even though I'm not home a lot, thank, you know, Buddha, Allah, God, Jesus, and whoever the hell you want to pray to for DVR, because I get to DVR all of season one, and I'm geeking out because they just are coming out with season two. And I just watched the first episode of season two this morning, actually. And it's a really, really, really funny show. It's about his character is named Kenny Powers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a former Major League Baseball player who basically peaked way too soon. And he, like, swears nonstop. And he's just, like, this unruly character. And he basically gets, like, kicked out of baseball. He can't pitch anymore. And now he's, like, this down-and-out bum who moves to, like, small-town USA and tries to fit in. And season two kind of picks up. He goes to Mexico. He ends up like fleeing the country. And do you remember that little midget? Remember Transformers 2, that scene where they pulled up to like the checkpoint and there was like that little midget guy that got out of the car?
I really do everything in my power to forget every single moment of Transformers 2. So,
well, that little midget dude who was screaming at John Turturro, he plays like Danny McBride's sidekick in the first episode of season two.
Okay.
It's just a funny friggin' show. It's just check it out, folks out there in internet land, if you have HBO, or check it out on YouTube. Probably the most popular aspect of like that Kenny Powers character now is he's in commercials.
Ah.
Like Danny McBride is in character as Kenny Powers. It's he's teaming up with Uriah Faber, mm-hmm. the WEC fighter, and they're promoting some new shoes from K-Swiss or whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, Uriah Faber's all like shredded up and actually working out, and here you have this Kenny Powers guy, you know, Danny McBride, who's like fat and like completely out of shape, you know, has like a and he just like talks shit all the time to Ryan Faber. So like it's super ironic. You have this like super fit guy being like talked down to by this like fat bastard.
Sure.
But just a really cool show. So basically I'm happy about all these TV shows coming back. Ventures, Death Clock, Eastbound and Down.
That really just goes right into my geek out, because I'm geeking out. I'm geeking out all over the fall TV premieres, like all over them.
Nice. We're in sync about TV right now.
Absolutely. I mean, I just watched the premiere of Big Bang Theory. How I Met Your Mother was a little while ago. Dexter last weekend was phenomenal. I'm not going to say anything about it because I know people hate the spoilers. So, yeah, just everything coming back. And there's even new series that I have yet to watch. What is it? No Ordinary Family. I'm looking forward to watching.
Yes.
My Generation with the Geek Generation's favorite celebrity, Jamie King, in there. So,
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of awesomeness coming out, and I'm just getting through it all still. So, but I'm excited about every moment of it. I'm loving it.
Ditto, man. I just like, first of all, the fall is my favorite season, and it's cool that like new TV shows premiere, old TV shows come back. But like I said earlier, just thank God for DVR, because a lot of us that have, you know, lifestyles or jobs that pull us away from our homes, when these shows are on, it's like, thank God I can watch them
absolutely
whenever the hell I want. You know what I mean?
Now, I don't know. I know you're very busy, so you may not have had a chance to listen to last week's episode yet, but we discussed a little bit DVRs and spoiler etiquette, because in modern times with DVRs and everything, that whole etiquette of when you can really talk about things openly is shifting, because you don't know when people are actually getting around to watching the episode. Do you have a basic rule that you go by?
Yes. Basically, for example, if it's something to do with any of the shows I mentioned or UFC or something, if it's for myself personally, I avoid, like, for example, if it's UFC, I'll avoid watching SportsCenter.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Until I can catch up to to the show, to pay-per-view, whatever it is. Same thing with those other shows. If I can't get it, I really just try to avoid it until I see it. If it's for someone else, I will keep the etiquette. I'll be like, hey, man, have you seen this yet? They'll say no. I just don't talk about it.
Right.
I'll be like, oh, well, you got to go check it out. Like right now, like Eastbound and Down, I didn't give any spoilers away. I kind of gave a synopsis, but I didn't say, oh, this happens and this happens. Like, because like you said, you don't know. Someone could have already seen that yet, or someone could have been waiting to see it.
Right. I feel like you do have to now preface with, have you seen this? Have you seen that? But
right.
But at some point, you have to feel okay to talk about it openly without asking necessarily. Is there a time frame where you would feel comfortable just talking about it?
To anyone?
Sure, yeah.
I guess. I mean, I don't really, I don't get into like the morality of spoilers on entertainment. I feel like, you know what it is? It's like if you have DVR and you can go watch something on your own time, then fantastic, go do it. But if you live in a cave and you don't have cable and you don't have whatever, then don't be surprised if people are talking about stuff. Like I have friends and acquaintances, some people still don't have cable just because they either can't afford it or don't care to. And then you start talking about stuff, and they're like, well, I haven't got a chance to look that up yet on the internet. And it's like, well, then you know what? Then buy cable, or what do you want me to tell you? So for a time frame, no. I mean, maybe a couple days.
Right.
You know?
I guess what I go a little longer, I would say. Cool. Basically, and it depends on the show, the popularity. There are so many variables when determining spoiler etiquette and everything, but I'll use Dexter as the example since so many people were upset that the season 4 finale was spoiled for them. And of course, I'm not going to say it because it is, this is primarily a spoiler free show unless we step into the spoiler room. But basically, Dexter has been running for 4 seasons. And if you, and the 5th season just started. Now, if you haven't seen the 4th season and the end of the 4th season yet, then it's almost like tough shit because
right.
The new season's rolling. The first episode is already talking about clearly the things that ended the last season. And it's been going for 4 seasons already. If you're not aboard the Dexter train, then you're missing out and too bad for you. You should have been caught up by now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, same thing. I think a good example would be like The Sopranos. You know, there was a long time in between seasons, like almost, you know, in some cases years. Same thing like we just talked about with Ventures and Metalocalypse. Ending in the middle of a season and then almost taking a year off.
Right.
And now they're back. It's like if you really haven't gotten caught up within a year, then obviously you don't give a shit enough about whatever show it is.
Right.
And then you should go find another show.
I agree.
So screw them.
Sweet. Well, then let's move on from our geekouts into freakouts.
Oh, freakout!
What do you got?
Oh, freakout!
Everyone loves doing the sounds. I kind of like that.
Yeah. What am I freaking out about? Well, you know what? I have two of them. I'll talk about the lesser of the two. We slowly just touched upon it. It's so weird, man. Like we haven't really been speaking too much, other than Geek Generation official stuff.
Right.
But it's weird because I was talking about TV stuff, and then you went into TV stuff, and now you just started talking about spoilers or etiquette. And one of my freakouts is I'm getting sick of the internet spoiling things, but yet half of it's rumor. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I'm at my job the other day, and one of the people at my work said, oh, hey, did you hear the rumor that, you know how John Hamm was supposed to be Captain America? Well, the rumor is he might be up for – they might recast Thor already for the Avengers because Marvel isn't happy with Chris Hemsworth's performance. And blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, really? And it sounded so off key. I don't know if the guy was like on drugs when he read the article or what,
right.
Or where the article came from. But I was just thinking, we have all these superhero movies coming out. And, you know, what a great time to be a geek and a comic fan because there's a lot of content out there.
Totally.
Whether it's the internet, whether it's on television or the movies. But my problem is, let me give you an example. Back in the day, I don't remember what film I was seeing in the movie theater. I was sitting back with my dad, and all of a sudden there was a slow panning shot around this like metal helmet, and the camera zoomed out, and it was Shredder.
Nice.
And they showed like the Ninja Turtles and stuff, and they showed all this action. So it was a trailer to Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
There was no internet back then. Now, maybe, you know, some magazine here or there might have talked about a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie coming out. I don't know, because I was a kid back then and I didn't really pay attention to that crap.
Yep.
But I'll bet you, even if there was some kind of pre-release information, it wasn't picked apart by thousands of trolls on the internet. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Like, the technology wasn't there to crap all over it before it could even come out.
Exactly. Yeah, like, I don't want people crapping over Chris Hemsworth's performance. I'm excited for Thor. I know you're excited for Thor.
Yeah, I'm super jazzed for Thor. And you're right. It's like now all of a sudden the internet is just – it's like a monster that needs to be stopped. And that's what I'm freaking out about. I just want it to calm down. And maybe this is a call to arms for, like, all geeks and nerds out there, but, like, relax. You know what I mean? Like, just go with it. If you don't like something after you watch something, then you can be like, Ghost Rider sucked.
Right.
But, and, you know, I'm guilty of it. Like, I remember, what was it, last episode, the one before, we talked a little bit about Ghost Rider 2, and I crapped all over it before it even came out. However, I had the first movie to go off of.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
It wasn't like before Ghost Rider 1 came out and I was like, blah, this sucks, because I didn't have anything to base it on. It was just other people's opinions, other people's rumors before something even was finalized. So that's what I'm freaking out about. I'm giving a call to arms to all peeps out there in internet land, whether you're a geek, nerd, a fan, a fanboy, whatever. Can we all just get along? Can we all just calm down?
I do agree with you, but you have to remember the crowd that you're talking to. And I mean,
I know who I'm talking to. They need to effing listen to what I'm saying right now.
It's true, but at the same time, if we're not speculating and giving our opinion like way ahead, as geeks and nerds always do.
Oh, speculation is great. Speculation's fantastic. I'm talking about just the straight up, this movie's going to blow, that kind of thing. You know, like you click on a website to find out news about something that's coming out, and then you check out the forums that they have linked already to the page. Like, it'll be right on the bottom, and you scroll down, and it's like hundreds of messages from random douches that are saying what it's going to be.
I gotcha. So you're saying that you don't want a movie you're excited about being spoiled, even just at a subconscious level, by the trashing of random people who probably don't even know any better.
Right, because it tends to... I always say this. You know, let's say you watched a comedy and they made fun of handicapped people,
mm-hmm.
and you're cracking up. Well, let's say in an alternate universe, you saw a commercial about handicapped people and it made you feel a certain way, whether that's sad or bad or compassion, whatever it made you feel.
Okay.
Then you watched the comedy about handicapped people and you were not in a good mood about that topic.
Gotcha.
You're like, I'm not really feeling this. For example, back in the day about the Ninja Turtles movie, if the internet existed back then, some douche probably would be like, oh, you know, Splinter looks horrible. I hate the voice acting already. I'm sure, you know, just based off of like the trailer or whatever had leaked prior.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go in walking into the theater and you watch a Ninja Turtles movie, and maybe some of all that crap that you've read leading up to it kind of seeped in.
Yeah.
Because one or two opinions, if they're strong enough, become the opinion of the masses.
Yep.
And then you kind of get sucked into that, like, internet troll negativity bullshit, and I don't like that.
So you don't want that nugget of truth put, or that nugget of doubt actually put in your head.
Yeah, I don't even want, it's like, just don't even bother.
I can understand that.
And maybe websites need to start taking their forums and their little like personal topic sections and just move them to a different page.
Right.
Like, don't even put them up there.
Well, I'm not going to stop trashing movies on here, so.
and no, that's fine. Don't get me, Rob. You know me, man.
I know, like, I know.
My opinion. Trust me, folks. I've been right a lot, and I've been wrong a lot. But in my life, I go with it, and I'm a passionate person. I wear my heart on my sleeve. And if I like something, you know it. And if I don't like something, you know it. So that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying like freedom of speech sucks, because freedom of speech is awesome. What I'm saying is trolls need to cut the shit.
Right.
That's my bottom line.
Okay.
Before you know something, shut up.
And that was just freak out number one, right?
I told you I was wound up.
Let's go.
Well, freak out number two, I'll try and keep it brief. The reason why I'm so wound up is I'm awake because I'm tired. Have you ever gotten very tired and then you get that like second wind hyperness?
You saw me in college. My tired was everyone else's drunk.
Exactly. Thank you for reminding me about that.
Yeah.
Perfect. So you know exactly what I'm talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely.
Well, as you know, Rob, but you out there in internet land may or may not know, I have a little daughter, my little girl, Evie. She is now 8 months old. And I'm freaking out because she hasn't even sprouted her teeth yet, and she's borderline walking. She can kind of stand up. Now, she's 8 months old. She can kind of stand up as long as like she has a finger touching something. Mm-hmm. She can stand up. She can laterally move. She can climb the stairs, by the way. Now we have to put baby gates up at 8 months. Usually baby gates are going up when a kid's like a year old. We got baby gates going up, and she's 8 months old. And I used to joke because I nicknamed my wife Supergirl.
Yep.
Well, my daughter's half Kryptonian because she's beyond her physical abilities right now. She's a little bit ahead of the curve.
Well, if she's starting to walk now, she might just become the fastest baby alive.
Yes, baby.
Take after kid, daddy.
Yeah, Kid Flash. Well, I always thought it'd be a cool what if you had a Kryptonian that could actually tap into the Speed Force.
Damn. That's like Batman getting the power ring.
Right. That's a powerful dude right there.
Yeah.
Or dudette. But my freak out, specifically, the reason why I'm tired, and I mentioned it earlier just now, she hasn't had her teeth come in yet, so she's teething, and it's pissing me off. She's not going to bed at night, and my wife and I actually are just trying to retrain her in her crib for a little while there when she was really little. We were having her sleep in the bed with us, and a lot of people are against that. There's all these different rules of thought when it comes to parents on what's the best thing about having your baby go to bed, whether it's crib or crib in another room, crib in the same room, in the bed, blah, blah. But we're retraining her in a new crib. It's lower. There's a high little wall there. And she fucking hates it, dude. if she could talk, you know, she'd be like, "Daddy, I hate you, son of a bitch." Although if she said son of a bitch, she'd be calling her grandmother the B word. So
right.
She shouldn't say that. Evie, don't talk like that. but she's miserable right now at nighttime. She's so pissed. And it's making me pissed because she's not sleeping. And so that's my other freak out, man, is I'm just like wiped. I just want her to cut them teeth and let's move on, baby. So there you go.
Well, at least she's not totally Kryptonian and chewing everything in your house as she's
seriously
sleeping.
Well, I caught her the other day. You know, Stephanie was trying to get something out of the trunk, and Evie crawled around the back and lifted the van up with one hand, a la Kal-El in the first Superman movie.
Very nice.
That took me aback.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, I can't say my freakout's driving me quite as crazy and giving me as many sleepless nights as yours, but
yeah, cuckoo. I'm cuckoo.
I'm freaking out over iTunes' latest update.
Yeah?
Yeah. Have you updated iTunes?
What is it, 10 point something right now?
Yeah, 10 point suck my balls is what it's on right now.
10 point fuck this.
Because this ping service is making me mental.
Oh boy.
Do you know about the ping?
I do not.
Okay. Ping is a new service introduced by iTunes as some horrible attempt to get into the social networking field through the iTunes. And, basically they want you to follow your friends so you can see what music they're buying and rating and things like that. Now, at first I turned it on. I was following like one person and I never ever checked it because I just don't give a crap. But now with the latest update, they have now put a ping button next to any song that you've clicked on. And okay. I don't want to see this. I've turned off ping. I have opted out of the service. I don't want this stupid little ping button showing up in every little thing that I click. I don't want to be force-fed all of Apple's garbage. Leave me alone.
That sucks. Every time you say ping, I think of some like Asian karate film where this like teacher is yelling at his dumb apprentice who can't like ping, put that down. Like, no ping. Like he keeps saying ping. Like I hate like Rob, you racist bastard.
Yeah, I know, right?
You hate Ping? Ping's a nice guy.
I think Ping's going to become a conscious entity on this podcast, and we're just going to beat the ever-living crap out of him.
We should make a drawing of like some random Asian guy named Ping who like is sitting in front of a computer with like a big question mark in front of his head. Like
we do have illustrators in the audience right now. I know you're listening, G1. Let's get on that.
Yeah, all fans of the Geek Generation currently listening to this, why don't you get on the computer and send a drawing to Rob at the Geek Generation and make some kind of drawing of Ping? We'll make a new character called Ping.
Yeah.
Let's do, Did we just birth a new character?
We did, and we're just going to abuse the crap out of him. I pity Ping already. He's not even alive yet.
I pity the Ping.
Ping would be our second character. We haven't had the intern show back up yet.
I think he's studying abroad or something.
Yeah, Marty was way back in like episode 3, which seems like forever ago.
We did have Joe Pesci do a quick appearance.
That's true. And it certainly won't be the last of many celebrity appearances on the
Pesci
show.
Pesci will be back. Hold on a second.
Is he? He's not there with you now, is he?
Joe, are you there?
Hey, whoa, give me that freaking microphone over there. Hey.
Hey, Joe, what are you doing over at Wally's house?
Hey, man, I'm just trying to get some freaking noodles over here. I want some pasta. I want it done right. I'm over here, and this guy, he's talking about Ping. I know this bastard named Ping. He owes me 50 G's. Are you talking about the same freaking Ping over there? Is that the guy? Are you the guy?
I'm not the guy. Do I sound like a Ping?
I don't know, man. You might be doing some code words or something, buddy.
No.
Tell you right now, if you're the motherfucker who owes me 50K, I'm going to come over there and ping you out your window, okay?
Ping? Joe, I assure you, I am not Ping, but I will find him for you.
Oh, you're going to find Ping?
I think Ping owes me a few dollars, too.
Well, he owes both of us a lot of shit, buddy. Oh, I got to go. Give me...
All right.
Hold on a second. Are you there?
I am. Joe is pissed today. He's pissed.
He... And I apologize for that language right off the bat. He clearly thought he was filming, like, Casino 2. I don't know what was happening, because he just was very angry, obviously, at Ping. He just ran downstairs. Next time I see... I think he's cooking rigatoni. Next time I see Joe, I'm just going to tell him that Ping actually isn't a real person. We made him up, and that it's something to do with iTunes. Rob, he's not going to know what that means.
I know.
He doesn't know anything about that, so he's just going to cook his pasta and call it a day. I'm real sorry. I'm really taken aback right now.
No, that's okay. That's okay. It's totally understandable. I didn't know Joe was like just hanging out at your place, though. That's kind of odd.
Yeah, I actually didn't have work today, so Joe came over and like he said, he wants pasta. He wants some noodles, man. He wants some food.
The man goes where the food is, no doubt about that.
Yeah, remember that scene in Casino where he asked Robert De Niro if he could go to that restaurant and get one of those sandwiches that he likes?
Oh yeah.
After he got barred from going into casinos, he's always thinking about eating.
Yeah,
that's one thing about Joe Pesci that's actually not widely known.
Make a fresh pot of pasta, and Pesci will just show up.
He'll just show, baby.
It's awesome. Well, those are my freakouts, so I think it's time to play some top three.
Let's do it.
Three, two, one.
Okay. Let's see. On the top three, I had a tough time coming up with one this week, so I almost pulled one. We used to do an Ask the Staff feature on the site, and then basically the staff just stopped participating, so I stopped running the article. But now I'm going to take one of those categories and throw it at you. So, Wally, what are your top three female actresses in an action role?
Okie dokie.
And now it can be movies, it can be TV, it can be any of those forms. But who would the top three female actresses be as far as like the action heroes go? Or even just an action role. It doesn't have to be the lead.
Okay. well, let's see. I know a popular pick is probably going to be what the hell's her name? Ridley from Aliens.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
But I was never a huge Aliens fan. Not that I dislike that series, but it just never really struck me. But that is one character that she's like a strong character without being too overly feminine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? She's a woman, but she just gets the job done, and I think that's why a lot of people pick her.
Gotcha.
Let's see, for myself, I'm going to say I actually enjoyed Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia.
Ooh, good call.
Back in the day, you know, she was sassy, and, you know, you had Han Solo, the badass, and she still, you know, talked to him however she wanted to. So she was like a princess without being a princess, you know?
Scruffy-looking nerf herder.
She, yeah, exactly. And if she ever said that to me, I would be so offended. Because that's our word.
That's right.
So yeah, I'm going to say Carrie Fisher, number one. Number two, this is a little bit of a cop-out, I'm going to say, but At the height of her or its popularity, Tomb Raider, Lara Croft, I mean, you have to, you know, I would say Mario is like the biggest like video game character, but definitely the biggest female video game character has to be Lara Croft. And that was like one character that, you know, she was in comics. She actually teamed up with Witchblade. I actually have those comics.
Yep.
And then they made a movie out of it and played pretty well by Angelina Jolie. But also, there's been a lot of really good-looking models that played Lara Croft in a commercial or in a magazine. So I'm just going to say pretty much any live-action Lara Croft is good in my book.
Gotcha.
And let's see if I can pick a good third one. I really like, I believe her name is Marcia Harden, Marcia Gay Harden. I don't know if that's her name. She played Sybil in the Silent Hill film.
I haven't seen it, so.
You still haven't seen I know how you feel about horror movies, but.
Yeah. Even though you know how interested I still am in the Silent Hill like storyline, though.
Yeah, Silent Hill's amazing. And I know I talked about the new comic on our last show we did together. But I just thought the Silent Hill movie was good. It could have been much better, but the character Sybil specifically, I thought they did a really good job. She did a really good job just portraying the character as like a tough woman. I mean, she's attractive and whatnot, but she still was tough. She had like kind of a shorter haircut. She's a cop, obviously, and she just kind of got the job done and did a really good job as being another mother figure to Alessa or Cheryl, whatever you want to call her, the girl in Silent Hill. Sybil just, in the movie, just ends up kind of protecting her. And here comes a spoiler alert. Are you ready?
Uh-oh.
Okay, spoiler alert. Yep. Sybil becomes like a martyr. She gets it in the end, but she goes out for a good reason. Like I said, she's protecting the girl.
Cool.
So that would be my last pick for female action character.
Awesome. Boom.
Boom!
Just like that. I like that too, because the three I had in mind are not any of yours either.
Oh, good.
Which is interesting.
you're like, I'd like to say Lara Croft, Princess Leia, and the chick from Silent Hill. Oh, wait a minute. You just said that.
Oh, crap.
Damn it.
Well, I figured I'd start participating in the top three, even though it's not spontaneous for me, just because I have too many opinions that I've been holding in, so...
Mark my words.
So I'll throw mine out too here. I would say Kate Beckinsale in the Underworld series.
Oh, I didn't even think of her. Good pick.
Bridget Regan in Legend of the Seeker, who we said would be a fantastic cast for Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman!
And Allie Larder from Heroes.
Yes, Allie Larder. She looks pretty good in those new commercials for Absolute Lemon Drop.
Did you
see those?
I don't even see commercials anymore the way I watch TV.
Oh, and, you know, she's an attractive attractive woman. You know, she looked good in Varsity Blues. She looked good in Obsessed. She's one of those ladies that I feel is almost looking better over time.
I agree.
She's looking more womanly.
Yes.
And very attractive. What I was going to say is, mark my words, though, the next episode we do, be it number 16.
Uh-oh.
I am going to flip the script, and because, you know, folks in internet land, Rob asks you this top three question, and you're a sitting duck, and you got to come up with something good. We record this sucker live. We're doing a webcast, and you don't want to look like a tool bag. So you got to come up with something good. What I'm going to do to you there, Rob, number 16, baby.
Yep.
You're going to ask me something.
Yep.
And I'm going to come in pre-locked and loaded with a random one for you.
I knew this was going to happen eventually.
Oh, and I'm claiming it. I'm putting the stake in it right now.
Sooner or later.
Yes. You're going to have to answer an original top three.
Oh, okay.
Someone else, not one you know already. But although I will say, you know, nice job of actually giving your opinion too, even though you knew the answer. But it's not going to be that easy next time, pal. Number 16, you're mine, buddy.
Oh, man, you're going to make the host just tremble in fear.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to pull out my my Sinestro Core ring and make you feel fear, baby.
Crap and a half. all right. I'm down for it, though. I always like a good challenge. Absolutely.
We got some time because, you know, like I said, we'll claim it for the next one that you and I do, which, like I said, will probably end up being 16
if
keeping this pattern. So you'll have some time, but you're just not going to know.
Yeah, all that time to prepare for a category that I'll have no clue about until we're on the air.
Well, but you may at least have some ideas. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, the stuff that is asking top three is geek kind of specific. It's usually like comics or film or a movie. So I'll keep it within that realm.
I appreciate
it. You see what I'm saying? I'm not going to be like, name the top three presidents who had a positive impact on the economy. Go.
And don't even try the top three horror movies with me because I'll just forfeit.
Well, again, you try to skew it a bit to the guests, so I'll try and skew it a bit to you.
Appreciated.
All right, I'll give you that handicap.
Awesome. Well, I'm also going to put out to the fans in the meantime that I do love coming up with the top three categories, but I wonder if the fans actually have some suggestions that they would like me to throw at co-hosts. So if you have a top three that you would like me to ask anyone, or if you'd like to actually aim it at a particular co-host, the next time that I have them on, I will do my best to use your category. I think that would be interesting.
That's a sweet idea. Yeah. Listen up, peeps. You should pretend you're Bullseye and just nail it with a question. Be like, I want to pick on so-and-so, and just boom. And then we're going to be like, oh my God, we don't know what you're doing.
Boom.
And you're going to be part of the participation in this webcast, mother.
Yeah. So if you got any of those suggestions, send them along with your poll responses to podcast at thegeekgeneration.com.
You said poll.
All right, well, I think it's a good time for a commercial break.
Do it.
All right, we'll be right back.
We all know the best podcast in the world is
The Geek Generation.
But what you might not know is there are other ones, such as
You and me, Hector and Todd, Dangerous Memory.
That's right.
We're reviewing the AFI Top 100, and we're bringing you new episodes every Wednesday. Come check us out on www.hectorandtodd.com.
Hello, listeners. Do you shop on Amazon.com? Would you like to support the Geek Generation while shopping on Amazon.com? Well, then I have good news for you, because you can do both without spending any additional money. All you need to do is visit www.thegeekgeneration.com and find the Amazon button on the front page. Click the button, do your normal shopping, and check out. You have spent no additional money, but you have earned us a commission. Please make this a regular part of your Amazon.com shopping routine.
Hello, this is Ned Vizzini, author of It's Kind of a Funny Story, and you're listening to the Geek Generation Podcast.
We are back, and it's time to take a look at the listener emails that we got. Last week's poll question: what TV show do you think was canceled far too soon? I can go right into the emails unless you'd like to throw an answer out there first, Mike. I can always come back to you around the end.
I'll do it real quick. My answer, and this may be coming up, but my answer will be and will always be Arrested Development.
Yeah, that seems, I would imagine, to be a popular one. I believe Todd mentioned that last episode as one that he would like to see return.
Yep, that was the show that just got yanked way too soon, and yeah, there was way too much talent, and it was a waste.
Agreed. So let's go into some of the response. Hey, look at this first response from Dave Palmacci.
Whoa!
He says, live-action version of The Tick with Patrick Warburton. It started off not so great, but the last few episodes were a riot.
Nice call, Dave, and let me give a shout-out to D. Palmacci out there in Cyberland, because he's probably listening to this.
I hope so.
I hope so. I was going to say, he's right, man. I didn't even think of that. He's 100% right. First of all, I'm a huge Patrick Warburton fan.
Oh, how can you not be? The guy's friggin' amazing.
And when Dave and I actually first met back in the day, The Tick was one of the first things that we kind of like had in common. We both loved the cartoon, and we just kind of clicked with that. And I actually have a few Tick comic books, too.
Nice.
But, yeah, man, that live-action TV show just that was during the era, and Fox still kind of does it, but that was like really during the era of Fox being like one and done.
Yep.
To a lot of shows. Like, that poor show only had one season to try and make it, and it just crapped out. But yeah, I'd love if they rebooted The Tick.
Cool. Superfan Chris Tong says, hey, Rob, thanks for not ripping my ass for complaining about you previously ripping my ass for goofing a couple of episodes ago. I think I'm dizzy now. Anyways, my answer to this week's poll question. There is a show that only aired for one season back in 2005. It's called Surface. It's a sci-fi movie about an ever-evolving new species of animal, or so we think. Won't give any spoilers, but I loved the show, and the cliffhanger left me wanting more. I've never heard of it, personally.
I remember seeing promos for that show. I never saw it myself, but Yeah, that was another show that just got yanked super quick.
We'll have to take Tong's word for it.
Yep.
Next one is kind of a lengthy response from G1. He, in reference to the last episode, says, "So that was a funny episode. I'll have to check out some of those canceled shows. I've never heard of any of them except Dark Angel, but I can't stand Jessica Alba. Spider-Man 2099 was a great comic, one of my favorites, actually." Hold on a sec. Got to get that out of the way. I think that Batman Beyond was kind of a ripoff of him. I don't know if you've ever read it, but the Spider-Man 2099 crossover was a great one-shot. I haven't read that. I didn't even know they did it. So that would be kind of cool to check out.
Yeah, there you go.
Did you read that at all, perhaps?
Well, Spider-Man 2099, he's talking about just the comic?
He was talking about the comic, and we talked a little bit about Batman Beyond in the last episode. So he wanted to mention that. He, in his opinion, Beyond is a little bit of a ripoff of Spider-Man 2099, but there was, a cool crossover between 2099 and Spider-Man himself in the comics.
Yeah, I did hear about that crossover. I never read it. There actually was a quasi Spider-Man 2099 cartoon. I think it was called Spider-Man Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about that?
I did.
And it's like a futuristic Spider-Man, but he's on like another world.
Yeah, I tried watching that. It didn't really fly with me.
Yeah, me neither. It kind of sucked, but I think that was their version of doing a Spider-Man 2099 without it being the actual thing.
Right.
You know, but yeah, the comic book I think was a really good premise, and Marvel actually had that going for a while. I think X-Men had a 2099, and a few titles had a 2099
yes.
to it. And I mean, if you miss that Spider-Man, you can just pick up Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions and just play that character to your heart's content.
Very true.
So, you know, even though the comic book went away, you know, the character obviously stayed in Marvel's minds because they brought him back for a very popular video game. So you never know, maybe they'll crack open that vault again and they'll start doing newer comics of him.
Would be very cool. I always liked that character.
Yeah, it's cool.
G1 did have an answer to the poll question as well, and said that, "I think that the show Strange Luck was canceled well before its time. It starred D.B. Sweeney as a man who was cursed / blessed with luck. He would find a glass eye in a can of soup at the beginning of an episode, and then at the end of the episode he would drop it and then go pick it up and find a bomb under his couch. The main plot for the show was that he was the sole survivor of a plane crash where he was 3 years old. He thought his entire family had died in the crash. It seemed, not sure though, that his brother and father also shared his luck and had faked their deaths and were working for the CIA. The show ran just before the X-Files, and the producers had planned a crossover, but the show was canceled just before it. The very last line of the last episode was him reading a note from his long-lost brother that said, 'If something ever happens to me, I have a friend in the FBI you can trust. His name is Fox Mulder.'"
Whoa.
I think that's a really cool place to go with the show. Unfortunately, we never saw the crossover.
Yeah, that's cool because it's like a parallel to spinoff, whatever you're going to call it, to the X-Files. So,
right.
Wow, yeah, I never heard of that show, and that's actually a really cool idea. So yeah, that's a great answer. Too bad that went by the wayside.
And you gotta love D.B. Sweeney.
Exactly. I mean, that's what the hell, man? Hollywood, why don't you just plug directly into this friggin' podcast and listen to people's opinions, and let's reboot some of the stuff. Let's bring it back, man.
I know, because we're pretty much right about everything.
We're pretty much 100% on target every single second.
Pretty much. I kind of shortened up the next few responses because they were all basically saying the same thing. In from Patrick Chambers, Mark Miley, and at Erica Lutz Stokes on the Twitter, all said Firefly in one way or another.
There you go. I'm not a ginormous fan of the Whedon-verse, as Whedon fans like to call it, but yeah, Firefly was very highly touted, and another good answer, you know, something that probably shouldn't have gone away as quickly as it did.
Yeah. Last response from at REH311 on the Twitter. He says, "Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, only lasted 2 seasons. Extremely well-written story, and Summer Glau."
Yep, anything with a good-looking chick is good in my book. I'm actually going to have to disagree with you there. Ooh. Yeah. I'm going to need that stapler back.
Ooh, I'm going to need you to go ahead and...
Coming on Saturday.
Yeah.
No, the reason why I'm going to disagree with that person, and again, this is just my opinion versus his opinion.
Yep.
But I actually am a big Terminator fan and was kind of pissed when I initially heard that there was going to be a Terminator TV show because I just thought, I don't know. I think if something starts out as a film and it's big enough, if you downgrade it to TV, it's like pulling away from the storyline of the films, from the, do you know what I'm saying? Like the legacy of the films. Like,
sure.
I mean, the fact that they've had Star Wars as a cartoon is fine because it's, in my mind, it's separate.
And it's such a large universe. There's so many characters you could go from.
Right, exactly. But if they ever made like a Star Wars live action TV show, I really think it would water down from the legacy of the films.
Agreed.
So my opinion was that the Sarah Connor Chronicles, albeit it was a pretty good show, I thought. I saw a few episodes of it. But I just thought it, and just my opinion, I just thought it kind of took away from the films themselves. But just my opinion.
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
I never even saw it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I really just wasn't interested enough to even watch it. I like the Terminator films, too. And I've enjoyed pretty much the majority of the movies. But I think my interest in a TV series watering it down was so low that I never even bothered watching.
Gotcha.
So those are the responses for the listener emails. I should throw out the poll question from this week. Not only would I like you to send in some top three categories you'd like for the co-host to answer, but this week's official poll question is, who is your favorite female actress in an action role? Wally and myself threw out plenty of them. Maybe you can come up with some that we didn't. Please send those to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. And with that being said, let's go into news. Top story this week, NBA Jam now flying solo on PS3 and Xbox 360. I'm very excited to report this right now. According to EA Sports, NBA Elite 11 has been delayed beyond its release date next month. They've decided to release NBA Jam as a standalone product on both PS3 and Xbox 360. You might recall a previous announcement from EA that stated NBA Jam would only be available on those two platforms as a bonus with the purchase of NBA Elite 11. The release from EA states NBA Jam will launch on the Wii as scheduled on October 5th. In addition to the Wii version, we're going to ship NBA Jam as a standalone product on the Xbox 360 and PS3 in time for the holidays.
Neat. I love NBA Jam. I have a few questions and concerns right off the bat.
Go ahead.
So it's going to be a disc. It's not going to be like a downloadable game.
See, that's one of the questions I have, because as far as I know, it will be a disc on the Wii. When they originally announced that NBA Jam would be attached to NBA Elite 11, we were told that the PS3 version and the Xbox 360 version would be a bit watered down from the Wii version because it wasn't disc-based, or at least had another. I believe the game would have come with a voucher to allow the download. So there was, in the quote, it said, we're going to ship NBA Jam as a standalone product, which would suggest that they are going to come out with disc-based ones here. So, yeah.
And that's sweet and all that, but now it's like I would rather just get NBA Jam over NBA Elite anyway.
Oh, that was my whole thing to begin with too. I have no interest in NBA Elite 11, but I want NBA Jam. However, I don't know if I want a $60 NBA Jam, but I can't imagine it will be that high.
Yeah, and that was my next question. Okay, if it's going to be a disc, then how much is it? And my last concern would be what stinks about sports games is when they come out early, usually the rosters aren't 100% accurate.
Sure.
And NBA Jam isn't really going to be a simulation, obviously. It's an arcade.
Right.
So, you know, for example, like, is LeBron James going to be on Cleveland Cavaliers or Miami Heat? Is Shaquille O'Neal going to be on the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Boston Celtics? Like, how soon did they finalize this roster?
That is a very fair question to ask, but you got to remember who you're talking to.
Right. Yeah, true. I guess we'll just find out when it comes out. So my point is, if you can edit the rosters, then sweet. But if you can't, then that stinks because you're almost playing last year's game.
True, but as far as I know, there's also Legends included. So I don't know really how up-to-date it needs to be.
Sure. It's just a giant free-for-all game anyway. But I was just kind of nitpicking. If there's Legends in the game, then my team's going to be like Bird, Magic Johnson, and Michael Jordan.
I know, right?
They're going to be on one team.
That would be pretty kick-ass.
Oh, yeah.
Some old-school NBA Jam right there. Next story. Batman. Arkham City info. There are some new quotes from Rocksteady Studios' Efton Hill about Batman Arkham City. Gamers who played Batman Arkham Asylum will know how dedicated we are as a studio to injecting an incredible amount of detail into every environment we build. It is this attention to detail that gives our games the deep and intense atmosphere that so many players have found so compelling, and so we have had to seriously scale up our art team in order to bring the same level of detail to Arkham City, which is about 4 to 5 times bigger than Arkham Asylum. He added that players will get a sense of continuity from the end of Batman Arkham Asylum, as you will begin Batman Arkham City with many of the same core gadgets that you unlocked in the first game. Which I think is awesome because there are so many games who want to restart you back to no superpowered, like totally no weapons, no nothing. But it looks like right. Arkham City is going to start off with all the same goodies and then they're just going to build onto it.
That is cool.
Yeah, I love that.
That is wicked cool. Wow, I love that. You know what? I have Arkham Asylum still sitting in my drawer for PS3.
Oh, that makes me so sad because it is such an amazing game.
Oh, I'm gonna you know get to it and beat the game before the sequel comes out. But I mean, I know enough about it. I've come across spoilers and again, let's wind the conversation back to our original point. What's the etiquette on spoilers? Well, at this point, you know, shame on me, but I don't really care
right.
about getting spoilers because I understand the game's old and I bought it, you know, after it first came out anyway. So. No, I'm already psyched for Arkham City, and I haven't even finished Arkham Asylum, so
well, it's gonna be good. Maybe by the time you finish, you'll be able to go seamlessly from one to the other.
Right, by the time I finish, Christopher Nolan's third Batman movie is going to be coming out.
Next story, James Cameron. Speaking of TV series, or movies, I should say, becoming TV series, James Cameron is producing a True Lies series for ABC. He'll develop and produce a television series based on his 1994 film. The original film starred Arnold Schwarzenegger as Harry Tasker, an everyday man, leading a double life as a top-level spy. When he learns that his unknowing wife, Jamie Lee Curtis, is unsatisfied with the monotony of their life together and, as a result, is planning on having an affair, Tasker accidentally pulls her into his secret battle against Middle Eastern terrorists. Personally, my only hope is that Eliza Dushku either makes a cameo of some kind or reprises her role from the movie.
Right, as the daughter.
That's right.
Let me see. My opinion on this is, right off the bat, my knee-jerk feeling is like it's too little too late.
I agree.
True Lies was like a funny movie, had some good action in it, a very memorable scene where they blew up the old bridge that went to Key West.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's all good and fine and dandy, but like you said, that was 1994.
Right, yeah,
here
I know.
Here it is, we're going on the year 2011.
Yep.
And all this really shows to me is how very desperate people are for new ideas, because there's not a lot of them.
Sure.
Hey, they're like, oh, remember True Lies? TV show, bing, bing, like, meh.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, maybe it'll be good. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know, I mean. There's not a lot to say about it. I mean, it kind of is what it is. But on the subject of Eliza Dushku, she also tweeted today that she will be making a cameo appearance in Big Bang Theory sometime during the season. I believe episode 7.
Bazongas.
Bazongas?
Yeah, I just did a hybrid of what they say and Eliza Dushku. Show.
Very creative.
You didn't get that, man?
I kind of did, but I wanted clarification.
It's like Bazongas and Bazinga.
I gotcha.
Yeah!
Bazinga!
Unbreakable 2. The villain from Unbreakable 2 is apparently going to be used for the third Night Chronicles film. M. Night Shyamalan revealed to MTV that we'll see the story he was going to use for Unbreakable 2 in that third Night Chronicles movie.
I cannibalized the idea for the sequel to Unbreakable for one of the Night Chronicles.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, it was such a cool idea for a villain.
Okay.
And it was actually originally in the script of Unbreakable, and it was just too much. There was too many villains. So I pulled this villain out, and I was like, I'll make that the second flick.
Got it.
And then it was sitting there, and I fleshed it out more and more and more, and I was like, this could just be a movie, a standalone movie. And so it would actually be it's the third Night Chronicles.
And the villain will be Samuel L. Jackson's wheelchair.
You never know.
coming back for revenge for having to let the brittle character of Samuel L. Jackson sit on him the whole time, and he had to put up with that, so he's coming back for revenge, and he's going to drown Bruce Willis in a pool.
What a twist!
What a twist!
Yeah, I know there's a lot of clamoring for an Unbreakable 2 movie, I think any sequel would be a just not work well. Like, the first Unbreakable was such a great movie in and of itself. To expand that, I think, is taking away for it. So I don't mind using that stuff elsewhere.
Yeah, let's just make a Shawshank Redemption 2 and The Mist 2. And exactly, like, some Unbreakable 2, in my mind, is in that category. Like, films that, you know, The Green Mile 2. Like, we don't, you know what I mean? Like, we don't need any follow-up. All of those films are, they end.
Right, like, what's he going to do now? Like, we get the point. He figured out exactly where he fits into the comic mythology, and people can be like that, but I don't want to see him actually going out and being a superhero necessarily. This movie was all about the mythology of comic books, and we got that. Let it be.
Exactly, exactly. Leave it alone.
Now, this next story I had to include because you would be on the show.
All right.
Greg Berlanti talks about the Flash movie. Quote, "I think it's tonally somewhere in between Green Lantern and Dark Knight. It's actually a little bit darker than when we were working on Green Lantern, because you're dealing with somebody who is already a crime fighter in a world of those kinds of criminals and that kind of murder and homicide." What do you think?
Well, I think it's good that they're going to play up that Barry is a police scientist, that he's a CSI.
Yep.
Because that's his job. You know, I don't want to get into the you know, age-old debate of, like, Barry versus Wally now.
Yep.
The only one thing that's bumming me out about this Flash movie is it isn't Wally West.
Right. I know you're such a big Wally West fan, so.
Yeah, that's just me being a Wally West fanboy. But, you know, above all that, I'm a fan of the Flash and all the different characters in that family. So, good. I mean, I'm glad they're having it tie into, like, you know, what he does. Interesting that they said tonally between the Green Lantern and the Dark Knight, because I would feel the Green Lantern would probably be darker than the Flash.
Right. I was thinking the same thing, so I find that interesting.
So we'll see. We'll see what they do. Honestly, any news is good news at this point. If they're talking about the Flash movie, that means they're moving forward with it, and that's all I want. I just want them to hurry the frig up and do a good job, and let's watch this thing. You know what I'm saying? So
sure.
If they say, yep, we talked about it here at DC, and Barry Allen's definitely going to be wearing red. Good. Keep going with that.
Keep on trucking forward.
Yeah, keep on tapping that speed force.
The last couple bits here are not things that I posted on the site, so don't bother looking for them, people, as normally I don't post rumor on the site because it just wastes a lot of my time when it gets disproved. But we can address them here on the show. So in Rumor Central today, Black Swan director Darren Aronofsky has joined the list of potential directors for the Christopher Nolan-produced Superman movie. The current list now includes Aronofsky, Duncan Jones, Jonathan Liebsman, Matt Reeves, Tony Scott, and Zack Snyder.
My pick would be Zack Snyder.
Really? Because my first thought was, please God, don't let it be Zack Snyder.
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really know who the hell those other people are. And I love 300 and I love The Watchmen. And I feel like Zack Snyder's tone can be very, what's the word I want to say? Kind of visceral, kind of brutal.
Right.
And I think that's what Superman needs. Like, Superman Returns was a great homage to Christopher Reeve.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of fans were clamoring for this. I want to see a Superman movie where he kicks ass. Like, I want to see a movie where he fights Brainiac, and then in the end of the movie, he, like, punches his head off.
Right. I do, too. But my issue with Zack Snyder is that he tends to go too far with everything. Like, Watchmen, as a comic, is pretty brutal and pretty violent. He amped that up even further for the movie, and it felt unnecessary.
I loved it. So, no, I want to see Superman just going apeshit. I want to see kind of like, what is it, the last episode of the Justice League Unlimited series where Superman finally, like, whooped ass and he, like, knocked Darkseid through a bunch of buildings and just, like, went crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that 90-second montage. Let's get some of that in a film. Like, let's see some – it's frigging Superman. Like, let's see what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to see a lot more visceral action and stuff from Superman, too. So I can understand that desire of wanting Snyder for that reason. If he can keep it in Superman tone and that kind of badassery, then I'm all for it.
By the way, badassery needs to be a real word in the dictionary. Can we get on that?
Yeah.
Can we get on that?
Again, more people that should be listening to the show and just taking our vocabulary straight out of it.
Yeah, we need to call the representatives of Webster's Dictionary right now and be like, excuse me, we represent this this Geek Generation podcast, and we really appreciate it if you can just listen to every single episode, and any word that you hear that strikes your fancy, let's just throw that in the next volume of the dictionary, please. That'd be great.
And we're going to specifically request badassery. We'll be providing a definition next week, and frankly, it's not going to fit on the page. So,
quite frankly, badassery needs to be a real word, and you dictionary folks, you need to put that in.
The other rumor in Rumor Central here is also regarding Superman. Apparently, Natalie Portman may be Warner Brothers' number one choice to play Lois Lane. Supposedly, Portman was in the running for the part as far back as Superman Returns.
That'd be an interesting choice. The only thing, I don't like a lot of crossover between Marvel and DC, in my opinion.
I have the same thought, man.
That's me being a super geek. I don't even like a lot of crossover with Marvel and Marvel. I think I mentioned this before in another podcast, but if you didn't hear that one, I'll say it in this one. Chris Evans as the Human Torch and Captain America is dumb. And even, in my opinion, even Rebecca Romijn being Mystique and then being like the chick that tried to get with Frank Castle in The Punisher, sure. I kept saying, Frank Castle, turn around and run, because that's really Mystique and she's actually just morphed into Rebecca Romijn. Get the hell out of there.
Right.
That's where I go in my mind. So right now, you have Natalie Portman, who's about to be Jane Foster in the Thor movie. So once that comes out, I'm going to say, okay, Natalie Portman is this character in this universe. And then you're going to be like, oh, but wait, she's really Lois. It's just too much for my geeky brain to wrap around.
I agree. I love Natalie Portman. You know I love Natalie Portman. But,
oh, yeah.
But for Lois Lane, I almost think that Natalie Portman is too recognizable to play Lois Lane.
Maybe that's an interesting angle on it. I don't know. You mentioned Ali Larder. She's kind of spunky. Why don't we like dye her hair black and make her Lois Lane?
I'm down with that. Sure, I dyed it for Resident Evil, the most recent.
Yeah, Ali Larder is my vote.
Take it.
Done.
Cash it in. Collect
cha-ching.
Your change. All right.
Gazongas. Bazingazongas.
We're going to take another quick break right now. And when we come back, I have a quick contest reminder for all y'all. And then I just said y'all. I hate that word.
Yo, y'all.
Don't ever let me do that again.
What up, y'all?
And then we have the interview with Ned Vizzini, which I'm very excited for. So we will be right back.
Woohoo.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris, your host for Geek Tech Live, the biweekly podcast that showcases tech news, reviews of consumer products and games, and I even get to talk to some of the movers and shakers in the world of geekdom. Occasionally, I even throw in a rant or two. So drop on by to geektechlive.com. See you there.
Hi, this is Hector from Dangerous Memories, and you're listening to The Geek Generation.
We are back, and before we get into the interview, I have a quick contest reminder for all the fans and listeners and all that good stuff. Last week, I announced the 2x500 contest. Basically, one of my goals by the end of the calendar year is to have 500 fans on the Facebook page, 500 followers on the Twitter account. If we hit both of those marks by the end of this calendar year, I will give out a $20 Best Buy card to a lucky fan. To enter, all you need to do is comment on the post for the 2x500 contest that is on the Geek Generation site. Go to www.thegeekgeneration.com, find that post, comment on it, and you are officially entered. If we hit those numbers, then I will give that gift card away. In order to hit them, please do your best to suggest our page on Facebook, retweet our tweets, send out all our articles on Twitter, and hopefully we'll get some followers that way. And when we hit those numbers, that will be the giveaway we're doing. But with that said, I am very, very excited to present to all of the fans a conversation I had with Ned Vizzini earlier this week. Ned Vizzini is the author of the book It's Kind of a Funny Story, and that movie is hitting theaters, starring Zach Galifianakis and a bunch of other awesome people, on October 8th. So enjoy the interview. Hey, listeners, I am joined now by Ned Vizzini, author of It's Kind of a Funny Story, which has recently been converted into a movie that is hitting theaters on October 8th, I believe in LA and New York to start off with, correct?
No, It's Kind of a Funny Story is going to be in 500 theaters across the country. So it's going to be in the top 50 markets in the U.S., not just New York and L.A., but you did get the date right, October 8th.
Excellent. Yeah, I know some articles have been saying October 1st, but it's definitely October 8th. We want to make sure that gets out correctly.
I am less worried about somebody getting the date wrong in the, you know, earlier direction in time as the later direction. Like if someone says it's coming out October 1st and a person goes to the movie theater on October 1st and gets told, no, it's coming out October 8th, then that's great. They can come back October 8th. But if someone thinks it's coming out October 30th and then they go to the movie theater, that's not even a Friday, I don't think. You see, it's a lot of problems. But October 8th is the date.
Excellent. Well, I have to say right away, I was doing some research and I discovered that you graduated high school in 1999, correct?
Yeah.
And I found that interesting because I graduated the same year.
Cool.
Yeah, so we're pretty much the same age, I believe. I'm only I got a couple months on you, but that's about it.
Well, I never thought age was that important. I'm friends with a lot of people who are older, and of course, a lot of my readership is a lot younger. I don't know. I always feel like the connections are possible with people no matter where you are in terms of your age. But this means what? This means that you know Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the real Ghostbusters as well as I do?
Absolutely. I think we're on the same geek level, pretty much.
I used to make my parents listen to me reiterating the plot of the real Ghostbusters when they came home from work. And then I saw an episode and thought, what was wrong with that? Have you ever watched any shows that you liked as a child recently?
He-Man, I would say.
He-Man, and what did you think of He-Man as an adult?
He-Man's not quite the same. I don't think it holds up.
Yeah, did you like question whether you had like maybe some developmental problems that you didn't realize when you were a child? Because I thought these shows were all brilliant. I thought DuckTales was brilliant. I thought Real Ghostbusters was brilliant. And then I saw an episode and I just wondered if I was like huffing paint, you know?
Yeah, a lot of those shows don't quite hold up over time the same way. I mean, I think the memory of them is a lot better than the actual reality nowadays.
Right.
Now, I wanted to ask you, you started off as a columnist for the New York Press, correct?
Yes.
Is that something you're still doing, as well as the books that you're writing?
No, I write book reviews now, and I contribute essays to anthologies about young adult books. So I write about books. And I write my blog. I don't do the things I did. When I started writing for New York Press, blogs didn't exist.
Okay.
And a lot of what I did for New York Press is the kind of thing that people now do on blogs. It was personal vignettes. And that's something I no longer do except on my blog.
Okay. So you wrote It's Kind of a Funny Story back in 2006, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I'm really curious about the process that it goes from writing a book and putting that out there to really the approach of, like, how did you hear that someone wanted to make this into a movie, or was it something that you were pushing?
It was something that I have to... You know, the reason that It's Kind of a Funny Story got made was because the directors were given the book, and they read it, and they loved it, and saw something that could... They saw what it could be as a film. So the key thing in terms of getting a book made into a film is getting a creative team behind it that believes in it and that cares about it really passionately.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who put it in their hands, was a producer on the film named, Kevin Mischer. So I have him to thank in large part for putting that book in their hands and saying, read this, see what you think.
Right.
But then also, you know, I have my agency to thank because none of this really would have happened if I didn't have, I'm represented by an agency and they take my books and make sure that they get in the right hands and, you know, talk them up to people. And I got lucky that they were working hard for me and put my book in the hands of some people who could really do something with it.
Excellent. Is this your first experience with the transition from book to movie?
I've had other projects optioned. This is the first time a
One of them has actually gone into production.
Okay. How involved are you in the process of that? Like, I know they bring on other screenwriters to make that conversion from the book to the actual script. Do you have a direct hand in the saying of what stays and what goes and how accurate to the book they're going to keep it, things like that?
No, I didn't have a lot of creative need in the It's Kind of a Funny Story film because I met the directors who were also the adapters of the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And I just trusted them right from the beginning that they really understood where the book was coming from and that they were going to do a good job with it. And then when I read the screenplay that they wrote, I thought, this is great. This is really actually, you know, it keeps all the key elements of the book, I felt, and it adds some new stuff that's funny, and it does things as a movie that work as a movie that wouldn't have worked in a book or that needed to happen because there's visual elements of a film that require things that I guess the best way to put it is when I'm writing a book, I have the power through words to evoke images in the head of the reader.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
But in a film, you've got to make those images kinetic.
Right.
And so there are some things that they added because it's a movie and it has to look good. And so we need to have some scenes that aren't in the book just to make it work as a film. So there are definitely things in the film that aren't in the book. But in terms of the tone and overall feel of the project, it really matches the book very closely, and I felt very comfortable with it. So I wasn't sitting over anybody's shoulder going, oh, keep this, cut that. That's not really my job. You know, mm-hmm. my job is done in terms of having written the book, and then my job is really to help out where I can. And I did provide a song. I sent them a song by one of my favorite bands that ended up on the soundtrack. And there's one scene in the film where a character is wearing a T-shirt that's my actual T-shirt.
Really?
Yeah. So that's something that you can, you know, keep your eyes peeled for starting October 8th when it's in theaters.
Is there anything in particular that you can say so fans can be on the lookout for it?
Look for the shirt that says Drunk Horse.
Drunk Horse?
That's the name of the band from San Francisco. It's one of my favorite bands, and one of the producers said, Ned, we want a character to be wearing a band T-shirt in this scene. Do you know of a band who you can get the rights cleared to in, you know, a couple days because mm-hmm. we're about to film? And I said, yes, the guys from Drunk Horse. Let me call. And I had to call the bass player, and he was in Mexico, but I eventually got the rights cleared, and so a character is wearing this Drunk Horse T-shirt. So look for that. My earlier novel, Be More Chill, is also in the movie. There's a scene where the main character, Craig, is reading it, but that's in the trailer, so that's pretty easy to spot.
Right,
the
right.
Drunk Horse T-shirt, people are going to have a tough time spotting. I'd be surprised to see who can find it.
Cool. Are they the same band that provides the song on the soundtrack you referred to?
No, that's a good question. The song on the soundtrack is by a band called The Wows, W-O-W-Z.
Okay.
And it's called Happy Today. And it's just one of my, you know, a real favorite song of mine, kind of about mental health and trying to keep on an even keel and how your emotions can get the best of you. And it always meant a lot to me, this song. And I was really happy that the directors liked it as well and put it in the film. And it's on the soundtrack.
Great. Did you get to spend any time on the set with the cast, anything like that, meet up with them, get a feel for what they would bring to the film at all?
I did. I visited the set of It's Kind of a Funny Story many times last winter, and I would say maybe I was there almost a third of the shooting days, maybe a little less. I met everybody involved in the film, and just kind of watched it get put together, and it was a very cool experience. You know, I mean, it was a lot of fun. When Zach Galifianakis showed up, you know, for his scenes, when they started filming his scenes, the headphones got very scarce because everyone wanted to have headphones so they could hear what he was saying.
Yeah,
he did such an amazing job.
Yeah, I saw him on Kimmel the other night promoting the film, and he is just hysterical at all moments.
He's very, very good at, I think, coming I think as a stand-up comedian, he really came to it with a lot of tricks in his back pocket. Mm-hmm. And there were some things that I saw him improv that some of which made the film and some of which, you know, I don't know what they're going to do when they put out a DVD of this film. But believe me, for everything you see that's funny in the movie, he's got a couple outtakes that are just as good. And I'm excited to see what happens with those.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes one of the best pieces of DVD extras is always seeing the outtake reel, and especially when they have such a talent like Zach Galifianakis on that, that you know has so much material he brought to the film.
Yeah, I also, you know, I don't want to... He's a huge part of this, and he did a great job. But, you know, he's... Keir Gilchrist also does a really fantastic job as Craig, and... what he's able to really do with his face and his eyes and his expression, I notice more every time I see the movie. And at this point, I've seen it a couple times at various screenings. And Emma Roberts is really, really good, too. Really good. And she is getting a lot of notice from real moviegoers who see this movie, who are writing their reviews on IMDb Pro. You know, mm-hmm. they notice... that she did a really great job. And when I met her, she told me, oh, Ned, I love your book. I wanted to buy it and make it into a movie when it came out. I read it when I was 14. Go write more books. She was a fan of the book before the movie even got put together, and I think that shows in her performance.
Oh, yeah, that's got to be great to hear as the author, that someone is that passionate about your work that they want to reinterpret it in another form like that.
Yeah, it was pretty funny introducing her. My mom, too, who's also named Emma. That was like the clash of the Emmas. I just, you know, who would have thought? I never thought I'd be hanging out with my mom and Emma Roberts at a party and hearing them talk about the relative popularity of their names in very different generations.
Yeah. The next question I have is actually kind of selfish curiosity, because I noticed that Lauren Graham is on the film. And I'm a huge Gilmore Girls fan, which I'm not afraid to admit as a guy. Mm-hmm. But she's absolutely stunning. And I just have to ask if she's just as beautiful in person.
You know, like most professional film and television people, at least I find, it's like you wonder what they look like in person, and then you see them in person and they look like themselves.
Right.
So, yes, I would say she definitely... It's not like you see her in person and wonder, wow, how does she look so good? Otherwise, yeah, that's what she looks like. And if you are super duper into her, then I don't think you would be disappointed by seeing her in person.
That's very good to hear. I appreciate that. Now, here at the Geek Generation, we believe that everybody has a little geek in them. I mean, I saw a couple of your interests listed on your Facebook page, and you definitely fit in with a lot of our crowd. But I have to ask you, what does Ned Vizzini geek out over?
Oh, gosh. Well. I geek out over Steven Seagal. I geek out over all of Steven Seagal's early 90s films, Marked for Death, Hard to Kill, Above the Law, Out for Justice, Under Siege, all that stuff.
Love Under Siege. Love Under Siege.
Under Siege 2, Dark Territory with Eric Bogosian is also amazing.
Fantastic.
I geek out over... There's something I geek out over that a lot of geeks hate that I just don't understand. I have no idea why people don't universally love it. I think Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull is great. I don't... What do you think about it?
I actually enjoyed it. I understand where the criticism comes from to a degree, but for me, I didn't think it was any more far-fetched to do a whole alien plot than it would be to do like the Holy Grail or the Ark of the Covenant or anything like that. They're all things that are based in some sort of story and myth, and they just kind of pulled that into the movie. But I think people saw a spaceship and were just thrown off by it.
Well, I find that a lot of the people who don't like that film haven't even seen it. So that's one thing. You know, they just like to hate on it without having seen it. I thought it was really funny and cool. You know, I geek out over dragons and Dungeons and Dragons and magic cards. I have a dragon desk calendar. I like fantasy a lot. I haven't played magic cards in a long time, though. I think I'm finally over it, which is good because I really had a problem with it for a little while. I used to play on the internet, you know, where you could play with those free emulators.
Oh, yeah.
And I just spent so much time, and I wasn't very good, you know. It's like if you have an addiction to a game, you should be good at it. And I kept getting beaten by these 13-year-old kids from Portugal, and it just got to me after a while.
Now, I have to ask this because you brought up Dungeons & Dragons, which I think is fantastic. And I, too, I'm a teacher, and I've actually used Dungeons & Dragons as an after-school class to help creative storytelling and things like that. Now, as an author, was that a good base for you to start off as a storyteller and kind of build that skill?
I used to love the Dungeons and Dragons books, the rule books, and I feel like as a boy, you know, you get to this age of 12 and 13, where the world is kind of becomes a sort of a scary place all of a sudden, and you're a little confused, and it can be very tempting to escape into that world of data. You know, you remember how detailed those descriptions of the monsters and the weapon proficiencies, it's just so complex.
Yes.
That it becomes a really nice, fun place to escape. And it's something that I've wanted to write about, and, you know, I can't say anything right now, but you might see it covered in a future book of mine to some degree. I certainly think... So I love reading the books, but I never played. I never had anybody to actually play the games with. And so I didn't really play a game of Dungeons & Dragons until later in life. And you play Dungeons & Dragons, and it's always a huge letdown for hours and hours. And then finally, you know, like 3 or 4 hours into it, it gets going, and you're not just arguing about what town you're going to go to or whatever. And then it really can become an exercise in free-form, multi-narrator storytelling. And that is intriguing. So I can see how it would work as a teaching aid. I can't credit Dungeons and Dragons for making me a better writer, but it's certainly something I'm interested in and something that I might be writing about in the future.
Are there any books or authors you look to as an inspiration for what you would credit starting off your writing experience?
Yeah, the authors that really made me want to be a writer were Stephen King and Michael Crichton. Were the sort of pop authors. George Orwell, you know, in the literary world, was really one of the people that I loved when I was a kid. So when you're talking about, you know, 7th grade, I'm 12, 11, 13 years old, those were the books. You know, I read Jurassic Park, and I was blown away by the fact that you could create a story so compelling that it could make the reader sit in a chair until their legs fell asleep, you know? And I thought, this is real power. This is what I would love to do. It would be a gift to be able to try and do this. So I love all the Michael Crichton books. Everything up to Airframe, I think, is pretty classic, and I think the rest of it is good as well.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate the time you're giving to us, absolutely. Before I let you go, there's a game we like to play on the show, if you don't mind playing with us.
I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
Okay. We like to play this game called Top 3, and basically I give you a category, and you give me the top 3 for you that fit into the category in no particular order.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I do have a category here, but based on your apparent love of the 80s cartoons, I'm feeling maybe I should tweak my category a little bit.
Well, it's a love-hate thing, I'm telling you, because now that I've seen these cartoons, I'm worried about myself as a child.
Yeah, I feel the same way sometimes when I look back on the He-Mans and the Ninja Turtles, and there are very few that hold up over time. But let's see. The category that I did have is what your top three movies featuring mental hospitals or the mentally ill would be, which I know is kind of vague, but I figured in relation.
The problem is I'm going to sound like a schnook if I say it's kind of a funny story. But, you know, I do want to emphasize, like, I really, really like the movie. It's such a strange thing to hear from the author of the books, because you hear so many horror stories about the author. Like, I saw Bret Easton Ellis talk on a panel. Bret Easton Ellis, you know, is another writer who I greatly admire. I can't credit him for making me try and become a writer, but he's great. And if you ever get the chance to see him live, he's devastating in person. Devastating. Woe be the person who asks him a foolish question. And Bret Easton Ellis was talking about seeing the Less Than Zero film. And if you've ever read the book of Less Than Zero and seen the film of Less Than Zero, you'll know what I'm talking about. He said, you know, okay, I'm in my early 20s. They turned my book into a movie. I was very excited. And then I found myself sitting, and about two-thirds of the way through the movie, I realized, wow, they didn't use anything from the book except for the names of the characters.
Wow.
And he's not bitter about it. He's very positive about that movie. You know, that's the horror story that you hear all the time. Oh, a bunch of characters got added that I didn't even know were going to be there. And I feel completely the opposite with this film. Like, I was blown away by how much it really captures the tone and feel of the book. So I do want to emphasize that. And so when you ask me favorite movies set in a psych hospital, it's kind of a funny story. It's definitely going to be one of the top three. And I don't want to sound like I'm, like, you know, being self, what's the word, too self-referential or self-aggrandizing there. But that's true.
That's perfectly okay. I would almost have hoped that you would include it in there, because I saw the trailer and I'm really excited to see it. And hearing your endorsement as the author to go along with it makes me want to see it even more. So,
yeah, it's actually, like, really, you know, I'm really careful not to tell you where the Drunk Horse T-shirt is or to tell you about the parts that Zach Galifianakis improv, because I would love for you to see it and experience it for yourself. But I guarantee you there's some funny jokes and there's some very key visuals that you haven't seen from seeing the trailer. And so there's going to be stuff when you see the movie that will surprise you.
Excellent. So It's Kind of a Funny Story would be one on your top three. Can you think of two others you would put in there?
Okay. Psych hospital movies.
Now, what it could be whether it is in a mental hospital or whether it features the mentally ill in any capacity.
You know, I mean, if I'm allowed to say 12 Monkeys because of Brad Pitt's performance and there are some psych hospital scenes in there, you think 12 Monkeys qualifies?
I think so. I think that fits the mold pretty well.
So let's put 12 Monkeys in there, for sure.
Excellent.
And then, 12 Monkeys. It's Kind of a Funny Story. What's another one? Another good.
Everyone I play this game with complains about how hard it is to be put on the spot. And when there's probably so many you want to put in, you'll think of them later.
It would seem disingenuous or like I was just trying to be too cool for school if you asked me about favorite movies set in a psych hospital and one of them wasn't One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which has such iconic performances and imagery. So why don't we do It's Kind of a Funny Story, 12 Monkeys, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
That sounds like a pretty solid list to me.
How about you? Did you have any others? I feel like there's some gems that I may have been forgetting.
People rarely turn it back around on me, so I always get caught off guard when I do, and I purposely don't do my research beforehand. I'm hoping that It's Kind of a Funny Story will definitely be in my top three. It looks like it will be. Let's see. Believe it or not, I have not seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So
what about Girl Interrupted?
That was pretty good. Pretty good. That could fit the mold. Now I'm trying to think really outside the box. But, I don't know. See, you could say anything with the mentally ill, then I would say like the Dark Knight and throw the Joker as clearly the mentally ill person there. I mean, I'm such a huge Batman fan, I almost feel like I have to include him.
Well, I'm one of those people who, you know, my opinions of the Dark Knight aren't... You're like a huge Dark Knight fan?
I actually preferred Batman Begins, but I'm a big Batman fan in general.
Yeah, this is the thing, though, is, you know, when it gets to these opinions, it's like, who am I to declare that the... if you haven't read Anthony Lane's review in The New Yorker of The Dark Knight, you should do that. That's he's got some interesting perspectives on that movie.
Really?
Yeah, Anthony Lane said that the soundscape of The Dark Knight, the sound design, sounded like two excited mattresses making love inside an echo chamber. Like, you know, when you read a phrase like that, it makes you view the movie differently. Did you like Inception?
I loved Inception. It was fantastic.
Cool. But yeah, let's do it, man. I think that's going to be my final answer. It's kind of a funny story. 12 monkeys and one flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Sounds great. And before I let you go, I'm going to remind the fans that It's Kind of a Funny Story is hitting 50 different markets on October 8th. So definitely go check that out.
Check it out, and you should. I'm going to post theaters on my website as soon as I know. But really, it's kind of the whole thing's kind of bigger than me right now. So just go on Google and type in It's Kind of a Funny Story and find a theater near you. And if you went, go and see this movie with your friends, it would mean like a tremendous amount to me personally. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm very honored to have you as our first interview on The Geek Generation. So I really hope the movie does well and rolls out nationwide, and it's a huge success.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you very much. We are back. Just wanted to say one more time, thank you to Ned Vizzini for giving us the time and speaking with us. I had a great time talking to him, and he was a great guy. So we are just about to wrap things up here. Wally, before I let you go, is there anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, quickly, I just want to say that was very cool of Ned to do that and add some kick-ass content to the Geek Generation podcast. I just want to say once again, this is Mike Wally Reinflesh saying thank you for listening to this episode. Look ahead to episode 16 because that's probably going to be my next gig.
That's with the hope. This.
And I'd also like to plug a program called Audacity that Rob hooked me up with. He has it, as do I. All of you out there who are interested in recording audio, it's a really cool, very easy program to use. Interface is not too bad, so why don't you check out Audacity, Google that sucker. And I'm going to be using that to do some content. I know we talked about it, teased it last episode.
Yes.
But we're going to start moving forward, and that's going to be the program I'm going to be using. We're going to get some comedy, more comedy on this site, perhaps some side stuff, some spin-off stuff that's just comedy based. Also, I'd just like to say, when Rob asked for feedback, if you guys have feedback out there that's specifically for comedy, whether it's voices, impressions, I hate voices, I love voices, anything, positive or negative, and if it's like comedy based, please throw that out there because that'll give me some sort of direction what to do. I can do a crap ton of voices, and Rob knows I can. So if I get some kind of angle that I can roll with, I will appease you guys and we'll do it. So feedback always helps. So look for some of that ish.
Awesome. Again, as always, if you like the show, please tell your friends about it. That's the best way we're going to spread this out to the masses. If you want to check out any of the news articles that we talked about or just the site and look for maybe some of the other shows, head to the Geek Generation site at www.thegeekgeneration.com. On there, you'll find a button to subscribe to us in iTunes. While you are there, please rate the show and write a review. There's also a donate button on the site. I'm always happy to get donations. If you have any questions, comments, insults, topics you'd like us to discuss, top three categories you'd like us to address, or you want to give Wally some feedback on all these things he just mentioned, you can send those to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. If you would like to submit an article to the site or an audio file to the show, possibly recorded with Audacity, send those to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can be found on our site. So wrapping up episode 12, always a good time to have you here, Wally.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Once again, this is Mike Wally Ryan Flash saying, 12 is my bitch, and episode 16, you're next.
We will see you folks next time on The Geek Generation.